Broadcasting live statewide from the Civic Media Studios in Green Bay, this is Nightlight with Pete Schwabba, your inside source on everything entertainment from Wisconsin to Hollywood. And now, a guy who binge-watches TV for a living but doesn't get paid, Pete Schwabba.
Welcome back to Nightlight. It's hour number two. I'm your host, Pete Schwabba, here on the Civic Media Radio Network. If you have not downloaded the app, you have to do it. It's the most easy-to-use app ever. Highly recommend it. You can take the show with you when you go. You can hear the news, everything. It's a great app, so I highly recommend downloading that. Hey, we're broadcasting live from City Deck here in Green Bay at the WGBW Studios. Great facility, beautiful night here in Green Bay. But broadcasting to the whole state, which we are going to get to, a good friend of mine is going to join us in just a second, Terry Bell. I want to read a couple more texts here. It's Frank Sinatra's birthday, and I'm asking you, the listener, to let me know what your favorite Frank Sinatra song is. There's so many to choose from. So far, I would say Witchcraft is number one. But on the text line, here we go. I have two favorite Frank Sinatra songs, New York and My Way, both classics. Both classics indeed. Here's a nice Pete Schwab bringing in the Max Inc. Roker vibes to my Tuesday night. Hey, I'll take a Roker comparison any night of the week. Thank you. That's from Andrew in Verona. Here's another one from Andrew in Verona. I'm loving this new Pete Schwab show. Okay, I'll read this over and over. Run it up the flagpole to Crute and Sage. I don't need more politics right now. I need more Pete. Well, that's what I'm here for, Andrew, late at night. We're just unwinding, kind of chilling. We talk politics during the day. We talk show business, and we have a few laughs at night. I love it. A couple more Sinatra texts. My Kind of Town in Chicago, or actually Chicago, I don't know if they mean My Kind of Town. I wrote that as a note because there's Sinatra had like two or three songs about Chicago, so it's hard to, if you want to text back, let us know if you mean Chicago, That Toddlin' Town, or My Kind of Town, because it's two different songs. One for My Baby, great song, and Witchcraft again. That's number two for Witchcraft. So many great songs. But in a few minutes, Richard Reilly, the actor, is going to join me. Richard has almost 500 movie and TV credits, and he's going to join us in a little bit to talk about his roles in Casino, Office Space, Fried Green Tomatoes. And I have a unique story about how I met Richard. We crossed paths about three times within 4 months, and he is just a great guy. Native Wisconsin son. He'll be here in just a few minutes. But right now, it is my pleasure to welcome to the show. He is the Civic Media News Director and also recently became, he's a volleyball fanatic, but he recently became a volleyball ref. So he gets an up close and personal look at his favorite team. Terry Bell joins me now. Hey, Terry.
Hey, Pete, how are you?
How was that on an intro? Was that okay? I hope
you did great. I really
am. You're like this multifaceted guy.
It's a lot to live up to. I hope I can do it.
I built you up too much. Is that what you're saying? Yeah. Okay.
No. I'll take it.
So, all right. So, first of all, before we get into volleyball, last night The Packers lost, and yes, Tommy DeVito beat them. All I can think about, you're a movie guy and a music guy. You remember Tommy DeVito from Jersey Boys?
Oh,
that's
wow.
All I can think about.
Well, all I could think about was a scene from another movie, Coming to America, where the Eddie Murphy character talks about watching the Packers and the Giants winning by kicking the football through a giant H. Have you seen that? It's
years
that's
ago.
Happened. Oh, yeah, yeah. Well, it happened again
last night.
Yeah. So I've seen that clip. I've seen that video on social media today.
Well, I figured it was a different Tommy DeVito anyway, so. But it was nice to hear that name. It made me think of a fun movie. So, okay.
Oh, sure.
You, I love your Facebook post because we're friends there. I see you attend all the volleyball games. What made you say, I want to be a ref?
Well, I've been enjoying the game for a long time, and enjoying the game made me want to understand it better and get involved somehow. Playing was out of the question. I just have no athletic skill at all. Coaching was too much of a time commitment, and frankly, I don't have the X's and O's knowledge. But officiating seemed like a good entry point. Yeah. Especially I'm a line judge, to be specific. which doesn't have as much responsibility as the two regular refs. But I am one of the two people in the corner, for the most part, calling balls in or out.
Wow. So yeah. That seems like it'd be a lot of pressure.
It is.
You can't even space out for a second, right?
You have, yes, there's no relaxing. There's no tuning out. There's no just scanning the crowd, you know, no people watching. You are dialed in. You are on your toes for the entire match. And that's part of the reason why I wanted to do it. It gets me out of my comfort zone a little bit, which is always good for a person to do.
Oh, for sure. See, that if that was me line judging, I'd be thinking like the Tommy DeVito thing in my head. Tommy DeVito, that was a guy from Jersey. And then the whistle would blow and the whole stadium would be looking at me and I'm like, yeah.
You wouldn't laugh.
So you do you do this for the Badgers?
Oh, well, no. That's just the thing.
Okay.
No, not at the Badger games. And when you're an official, you don't work for any team. In fact, they're very... they do a really good job of vetting referees. You have to put in your contract when you sign up, you know, if you have any sort of loyalties or affiliation with any schools, and they try not to schedule you to work those. You should be as objective as you possibly can. I worked a couple games down at UW-Whitewater. And that's a high level. They are one of the top Division III programs in the country. So that is a very high level of volleyball. And it was a real challenge. Like I say, it kept me on my toes.
So that's kind of cool. You still get to go to the Badger games and enjoy yourself and watch them play volleyball. What, do you have a prediction? How do you think you're going to do?
Well, you know, Texas is an excellent team. So they play Texas in the semifinals on Thursday night. Very formidable team, Texas. But I saw Sarah Franklin, one of the Badger stars, give an interview yesterday with Michaela Chester, who's the NCAA's volleyball correspondent. And Sarah just looked so calm and in control and happy. And I thought, you know, they feel good. They look like a team that's on the verge of doing some big things.
Certainly not intimidated or no. In above their head. What is going on with UW sports in general? I mean, they're like a powerhouse. Like the hockey team is great. Football and basketball are top 20 just about every year. There's not a lot of programs like that. I mean, do you follow all the UW sports?
You know, some more than others. I think it's really great what's happening with men's hockey this year. You know, there weren't a lot of expectations, and they are just completely, blowing all the expectations out of the water. And the fans are coming back to the Kohl Center, which is really good to see. Women's hockey has been fantastic for a long time. Men's basketball is exceeding expectations right now. Women's basketball just had a big sellout. Of course, that was mainly due to Caitlin Clark, the big star from Iowa who was in town with the Hawkeyes. I was there because, you know, I just want to be able to say in the future, I watched her play.
That's so cool.
It's exciting what's happening right now, especially with women's sports. They're breaking all kinds of attendance records and TV ratings records this year. So I think the level of play in women's sports has gone up, but I think the level of awareness, appreciation has also gone up, and they're meeting in this place and time right now. That's just a lot of fun. Every time the Badgers go deep in the postseason, you bring I talk to more people who come to the game the first time they watch their first game on TV that the previous night, and they always say, "Wow, I had no idea it was so much fun to watch." And it really, it's a fantastic spectator.
Just
sport,
a great
both
atmosphere
in person and on TV. Oh,
yeah, for sure.
The atmosphere at the Fieldhouse is fantastic. Probably the loudest crowd of any of the Badger teams. Because if you didn't see the game, go to YouTube and watch the highlights. It's insane. They were running after balls that had gone way out of bounds to keep these rallies alive and not lose a point. And just a gutty performance on Saturday, and the crowd really rewarded them. It was just the energy was off the charts.
Yeah, it's fun when they get a great volley going, and it's like, oh, I can't believe she said that. Oh, and then they return. Oh my God, and it keeps going. It's like it's
like all the rallies over. Oh my God, right. It's fantastic that way.
So you love baseball too, Desire to be an ump? I always see your posts and you're at a lot of baseball games. Is this how you escape from news, from being a news director?
Well, you know, I owe a lot of that to my dad. I owe a lot to my dad. My love of baseball is certainly one of those things. But no, at a baseball game, I think I just want to sit back and sip a beer and enjoy myself. I don't know if I want to go to the ballpark to work necessarily.
That's right. I am talking with Terry Bell. He is the Civic Media News Director, and he's also a huge fan of baseball, volleyball. Just became a line. Is it line judge for volleyball?
Line judge.
Okay.
Yep.
I think I was saying ref before. Your other big passion, at least based on Facebook, which is how I judge everybody in the world, is movies. You have great movie posts about movies and old historical films. What does Terry Bell watch? What are your films you're sitting down with at night?
Well, I tell you, it's a mix of things. It's a mix of new releases and classics. I got interested in movies from reading Roger Ebert's columns. And Rob Thomas will say the same thing from the Cap Times, is that he likes to write columns that could stand on their own. If you never see the movie, you could still enjoy the column.
Oh, that's interesting.
And Roger Ebert's columns really spoke to me, and he was such an amazing writer. And it occurred to me after a few years that I needed to be a little more literate about this. So I actually got a library card, and the library is a fantastic resource for classic film, by the way.
Yeah, definitely.
And I filled up a queue of about 300 movies and watched them over the course of about 5 years. Films that were important, films that were classic. And it's just such a fantastic art form because the movies incorporate a little bit of all the other art forms.
Yeah,
and that's
for sure.
What I love about it. Yeah.
Yeah. I can tell you like the classics and, what are you watching right now? Like, do you binge watch or do you,
a little streaky depending on how my schedule is. And like right now during volleyball season, I'm probably not watching as many movies. But I think there's a fantastic resource called Canopy, which has a real cross section of films. But, I really enjoyed over the weekend, a couple of weekends ago, I saw Killers of the Flower Moon.
Oh, you know what? I want to ask you about, can you stick around for we got to do 60 seconds worth of business. Can you hang?
Of course.
Okay.
Sure.
Terry Bell, Civic Media's own Terry Bell. We'll be back with more about Killers of the Flower Moon and other big classics. It's Pete Schwab and Nightlight on the Civic Media Radio Network. Schwab, we're talking show business tonight. Had a great act in the studio earlier, 7,000 apart. They were phenomenal. We're going to talk to actor Richard Reilly in just a few minutes about his many credits over his lengthy show business career. He is a native son from Wisconsin here. But right now we're talking to Terry Bell. He is the news director for Civic Media and a line judge for volleyball and an avid UW sports fan, including women's volleyball. And we are talking to him right now about what he watches. Terry, so you love classic movies. What else? What do you go home, like tonight? Let's say you got 3 hours. What's Terry Bell putting on the tube?
Well, you know, it seems, Pete, in the last couple of years, and I never thought I would hear myself say this, I have gotten into horror.
Whoa, nice.
Yeah. You know, you and I are of a similar vintage. I grew up in the 80s when, frankly, and I probably get some flack for this. I thought horror movies were just dumb. The Invincible Monster slaughters a bunch of dumb teenagers, and what's the point? That's just my take.
They were pretty
enjoy
dumb.
That,
yeah.
I'm not casting any aspersions on anyone who enjoys right. that. But in the last few years, and I got really sucked into a podcast called the Dead Meat Podcast.
Oh,
it's
man.
A husband and wife. They went to film school in Michigan, and and then not only do they love horror, but they are just very knowledgeable about movies. Anyway, I got, and they would be great guests for you sometime, by the way.
I love it. I'm gonna hit you up for that. That's great.
Yeah, yeah. We'll talk more about that. But anyway, I just enjoyed their commentary. So I kind of got into it the same way with Roger Ebert with Classics. They were talking about things that I thought were really interesting. And it's been a real renaissance for horror lately. Horror evolved from dumb movies to really smart movies. And I think the term in recent years, and some people use it as a pejorative, but elevated horror.
Yeah.
Which I consider to be just smart movies made for grownups that don't insult your intelligence and are scary.
Right.
And but directors like Ty West and Ari Aster, movies like Hereditary, Midsommar was such a game changer. Midsommar, if you want
to. You told me about that film. I know you love that film. And Hereditary, everything I've heard about it, I'm honest to God, I'm like scared to watch it. It sounds so creepy. I can't bring myself to watch it. I will eventually. I'll get in the right mood, but man, I'm just not there yet.
Yeah, there's one moment, I won't spoil it for you or anybody, but there is one moment in Hereditary that's just devastating. Not only scary, but just devastating. Yeah. And so well done. I really think there was a there are two parts of a trilogy came out in recent years. First was called X. The second is called Pearl. X and Pearl. So this is, the director was Ty West. So the first movie was about a group of young people late in the 1970s shooting a porno movie at an old couple's farm, and things go horribly wrong.
Sorry, I'm not familiar with that genre. I don't know what you're talking about.
Oh,
I meant the porn. Sorry.
All right. I finally.
I'm more sophisticated. I say adult film, but you know what? We all have our own verbiage. Fair That's enough. Fine. Sorry. Go ahead.
Yeah. But anyway, the X was just such an homage to 1970s filmmaking. It's a lot. There is a lot of the Texas Chainsaw Massacre's DNA.
Oh,
in
nice.
X. A lot of the shots and the framing of the scenes are callbacks to that. So if you're nostalgic for that time of movie making, there's a lot to like in X. Pearl is like if The Wizard of Oz was a horror movie.
Oh, wow. It is Pearl. To some.
Well, yeah.
Not just because it was on every year and you had to watch it, but.
Well, yeah. And, you know, some of the best kids movies have some scary parts.
Yeah. For sure.
Wizard of Oz, Bambi.
Listen,
yeah,
I was scared to death in The Wizard of Oz of those flying monkeys.
Of course.
Are you kidding me? I honestly, I was like stood out in the hall and terrible. Do you have TV shows you watch, Terry? Do you binge watch anything?
I'm not a big series guy, okay. For better or worse. I think the last series I binged was Schitt's Creek.
Okay.
Give you some idea. Yeah.
So as a news guy, I'm talking to Terry Bell. He's the Civic Media News Director and a big arts and entertainment fan. Do you like movies about news, like The Paper or The Newsroom?
Oh,
do you watch those kind of
shows?
Sure.
Yeah. I think early as a young adult, the movie Broadcast News, Holly Hunter, Albert Brooks, really, really got into my system. That was one of those movies that stayed with me for years after I saw it. I saw it multiple times. Spotlight was incredible. I was too young to see The Watergate movie. Help me out.
All the President's Men. I've seen it like 10 times.
Too young for that when it came out, but seeing it as an adult was an incredible experience. Network was
Network was great. All the President's Men had like this subtle intensity about it. A lot of scenes, and they're like, are they being followed? It's so great. So this is great. Real quick, do you have a favorite Sinatra song before we let you go?
Oh my gosh. I would have to say All the Way.
All the Way. Great song.
Yeah.
That's our first vote for All the Way. Okay. Love it. That's awesome. Well, hey, Terry, I know you got a full slate. You're doing an incredible job with the news. And you're a busy guy, so I really do appreciate you taking time out and introducing me to this amazing company that is Civic Media. So thank you so much for that as well.
I had a blast. Thanks, Pete.
All right. Anytime. We'll have you back soon. Thanks, Terry.
I'd like that.
Okay. So tomorrow night in the show, if I can get a quick plug in here, and I can because it's my show, Steve Burrows, a Wisconsin filmmaker, or another native son, is going to join us. He made a film called Chump Change that he shot in Milwaukee, an indie film that did well in the festival circuit. Very funny movie. And he also did a documentary for HBO called Bleed Out, which is outstanding. So Steve will be here tomorrow night. Don't miss that. And in just a couple of minutes, my good friend, Richard, not good friend, good show business friend. That's what we say in show business. Everybody's your good friend. Richard and I are not tight, but I love the guy and I am proud to call him a friend. He's excellent. So right now, that's just a couple minutes away. But I think right now, Conrad, let's fire up. Let's go out with a little Sinatra. Let's give the fine folks a couple minutes of the chairman of the board here on Civic Media. This is Pete Schwab. You're listening to Nightlight.
Those fingers in my hair, that sly come hither stare, that strips my conscience bare, it's witchcraft. And I've got no defense for it, the heat is too intense for it. What good would common sense for it do? 'Cause it's witchcraft, wicked witchcraft. And although I know it's strictly taboo, when you arouse the need in me, my heart says yes indeed in me. Proceed with what you're leading me to. It's such an ancient pitch, but one I wouldn't switch, 'cause there's no nicer witch than you.
You know, there are people in this world that don't have to put up with all this shit. Like that guy that invented the pet rock. You see, that's what you have to do. You have to use your mind and come up with some really great idea like that, and you can make millions, never have to work again.
You think the pet rock was a really great idea?
Sure it was. The guy made $1 million. You know, I had an idea like that once, a long time ago.
Really? What was it, Tom?
Well, all right. It was a jump to conclusions, Matt. You see, it would be this mat that you would put on the floor and would have different conclusions written on it that you could jump to.
That is the worst idea I've ever heard in my life, Tom.
Yes. Yes, it's horrible, this idea.
Oh, that's so great. That was a clip from Office Space where the characters, the main characters, are talking to their coworker named Tom Smikowski, who is played by my next guest, Richard Reilly, who joins us now over the phone from Los Angeles. Hey, Richard.
Hey, Pete. Good to talk to you again.
So great to talk to you too, buddy. I've got not a ton of time and 182 questions, so I have so much always to talk to you about.
Go right ahead.
I love that. Okay. Are you a Sinatra fan, Richard?
I am. I heard you were just first part of your program was a favorite Sinatra songs. There's a program that's here on K-Jazz, which is a local radio station I listen to, and they have 2 hours, 3 hours, I think, of Sinatra every Saturday night and Sunday morning.
Oh, wow. I used to listen to K-Jazz all the time. I loved when he died. He lived in Beverly Hills. I had been living there for a couple of years. I was out there for almost 15 years, and I saw a skywriter say, "So long, Frank," or something to that effect. And I thought to myself, oh my gosh, I live in the same city as Frank Sinatra. I just had this revelation, and it was kind of cool, you know? So, and I also lived in the same city as you, and now we're pals, so I'm happy about that.
Exactly, me too.
Yeah, so, all right, I want to tell people how I met you, because this was kind of crazy. I think we crossed paths like two times within 3 months. I interviewed you and Roger Rappaport about the film Pilot Error on PBS in Madison. I met you there. My daughter was with me in the green room. And when she found out who you were later, she got kind of excited. She's like, wow, that guy's got a lot of credits. I'm like, yeah. And then we were in a movie. You were in my hometown of Marinette. I want to say just a few months later doing the Mike McGuire film Aquarians. And I also saw you. I'm like, this is so crazy.
I know. It was amazing. Yeah. And that was a wonderful film. I really thought that it turned out really well, but I thought it was really a terrific working on it there. And I think I was staying in Menominee, as I remember.
Okay.
And and we were traveling back and forth to the various locations, but that was really a wonderful idea that Mike had.
I filmed a film there, The Godfather of Green Bay, in 2003, 2004 with Tony Goldwyn, Lauren Holly, and I played the lead and directed it. It was crazy. And I thought, I'm never going to be able to be in a movie again in Marinette, Wisconsin. Well, here comes Mike. And he shoots his movie and he needs local people. So I ended up doing another movie in Marinette, Wisconsin and seeing you again, which was great. You mentioned Menominee. You're in another movie that filmed in Menominee called Waterwalk that was directed by Bob Cecchini. So
exactly.
You have all these crazy connections to my hometown, which I think is kind of cool.
Well, and I grew up in Menominee Falls.
That's right.
Of course, on the other side of the state, but same thing.
So that's one of my questions. Like, when you're choosing movie roles, do you kind of, are you more apt to take one if it is in Wisconsin, just so you can come back and visit?
Well, I always that is at least one factor in it. If it's an opportunity to get back and. You know, to Wisconsin and see old friends and family. But it's a sort of like about a 4 or 5 step process. The first is the entire script. If it's a good script, that's the first thing. Then I look to see what characters they're interested in having me do. And if it's a character that I like, that's an additional, asset. And then who else is going to be working on it is another thing. And then where it's going to be shot. I mean, when I first got into doing film and TV, the travel actually was a big thing that I was looking forward to. I thought, oh, this is going to take me all over the United States, over the world. Well, it did a little bit, but not nearly what I expected.
You ended up back in Wisconsin a lot.
I did. It was great. I ended up doing a lot of a number of things there. I did a Medal of Victory in Madison, and Delight in the Mountain. We did that over in somewhere on the west side of the state.
Okay.
And you know, and then I did a couple of music videos for Trapper Shep. That we shot in Wisconsin. So it's always been nice to be able to go back there.
Yeah, I'm sure. Well, it's I love that you're from here and that you do come back, and it's a pleasure to know you. So I want to tell everyone listening too, you have, and I just looked this up on IMDb Pro before, 438 credits as an actor. You've got like 20 projects in pre or post production. You did 12. You did 12 roles alone in 2013. Does IMDb have to purchase more bandwidth just because of your career?
No, not hardly. And that's the thing, though. There's the stuff that's in post. Some of the stuff I shot like 4 years ago, but between COVID and the strike, they have not been able to get distribution for them. And then all of a sudden, when the contract was settled, I kept getting calls. There were like five films that they had held off doing screenings of because they wanted the actors to be able to go and promote them, and so they're now kind of finding their way onto very streaming platforms, and then a couple of them are on YouTube now too.
That's so cool. And here's another, okay, for those of you listening, I'm talking to Richard Reilly. He is a great actor, originally from Wisconsin, 438 credits. The guy loves to work. He's a great actor, excellent credits. And here's where, you know, there's the Kevin Bacon game, 6 Degrees of Separation. They should have a Richard Reilly game because I was, I had a project get killed this winter that I was going to shoot in Northern Michigan. It's a crime thriller. Mm-hmm. And I thought, oh, let me, I'm not going to go out and scout. It's too cold. So let me watch a movie that was shot there. Well, I turn on this film called Nowhere, Michigan. And who's in
it?
Oh,
my gosh.
Richard Reilly. You're like right. Everywhere. It's hilarious.
Oh, that was a hoot. And one of the gals who is in it has a project they've been shooting for like 5 years up there.
Oh wow!
I can't remember what camera was called now, but they just had a screening of the the last two episodes. Over the weekend.
Yeah. Oh, I know what you're talking about. Yeah, it's in the UP. I know.
Yeah.
I could sit here all night and try to remember. Yeah, I know exactly what you're talking about, though. It is. And I thought that was impressive, like a series in Northern Michigan. Yeah. That's pretty cool.
Yeah.
So you've worked with so many great directors. Do you have a favorite?
You know, there have been so many. I really loved working with Gary Sinise on Mice and Men.
Oh,
there was
nice.
Something about that project that was that he pulled it together in a way that you always felt that you were a part of it. First off, I mean, it's such such a wonderful story.
Yeah.
And then he and he did an adaptation that just he wanted to show why it was unusual for two guys like George and Lenny, to be traveling together and working together, where everybody else was just by themselves. And so he kind of added some elements of that with it. His dad was the editor, and it was just an amazing group of people. And one of the things that he did was that every night he screened the dailies, and everybody was invited. Another means of keeping the whole company together. And there, you know, there'd be beer and sandwiches, and you sit and watch, you didn't have to go, but it was a nice way to end the day.
Yeah, totally. And to promote some unity on the set. Gary Sinise, great stage actor from Chicago. Were you a stage actor before you went to L.A. and pursued movies?
For years, yeah. Okay. I did like 20 years of theater in the Midwest, and then on what we used to call the I-5 rep, from the Alaska rep down to the Arizona Theater Company, and every place in between. It was great. I love doing theater, and fortunately I get a chance occasionally to do some. The last thing I did was an adaptation of Key Largo that Andy Garcia did, and it was wonderful. We had a terrific time, and we were hoping to take it to New York, and literally the week that we closed in Los Angeles, we did it at the Geffen, everything shut down.
Oh wow!
Yeah.
So you've got 438 movie credits. And you did 20 years of theater. Is there a play or a film or a script you haven't acted in? That's really impressive. I mean, talk about working and hardworking. That's
I was just fortunate. I mean, things kind of fell into place for me, and I was able to go from, for years I essentially lived out of my car. I would go from one regional theater to another, doing shows, and I really enjoyed it, and it's like. My youngest brother recently retired. He moved from West Bend, where he was he worked at a bank, to Florida, where I don't know how long he's going to last there. but every time I'm the oldest of seven, and every time one of them retired, they would say, "Well, why are you going to retire?" And I'd say, "Why?
Yeah,
I'm doing what I love to do, and I don't." You know, I would go crazy if I was sitting around doing nothing.
You know, it just made me think of this. I love that. One of the things I love the most about living in LA was my son, Joe, was in baseball, Toluca baseball. Andy Garcia was one of the coaches that I coached against. His kid was on the other team. And he and I talked about, he had an A2000 baseball glove and I had an A2000 Wilson baseball glove from the same like year, from like 1979. And
oh my God,
we talked about our baseball. His was in better shape, but we talked about the A2000 in baseball for about 10 minutes. And I walked away and it was just a thing. And then I get back to the dugout and I go, oh my God, I just had a 10-minute conversation with Andy Garcia, not involving show business, with this guy who my wife is in love with. So, yeah, it's just, it was a lot of fun. What did you think of Scorsese?
I thought he was terrific, but the whole thing was so sort of crazy. I got a call at 10 o'clock in the morning. Could I be on a 1 o'clock flight for Las Vegas? I had never seen the script. I had never had an audition for the show. They said there may be some other actors on the flight. They haven't replaced somebody, and they have to be out of this house that they were renting, which is the actual house on the golf course, by the end of the year. So they're desperate to get these scenes shot. And so they said, when you pick up your ticket at Burbank, there'll also be some slides. Learn the slides on the way up, and you'll read with them, with Scorsese and whoever, when you get up there. So there was only one other actor on it, and it was a guy by the name of Clive Rosengren, who I had gone I had been in grad school when he was an undergrad at Minnesota. And so,
hey,
we
Richard,
got up there.
Can I just stop you for a second? We have to do a really quick break. Can you hang for a couple minutes? Because I think the story is just starting to get really good. Okay. I'm going to be right back with Richard Reilly. He's telling his story about when he was in Casino with Martin Scorsese. Do not miss this. We'll be back in just a few minutes. It's Richard Reilly, the great actor from Wisconsin originally. Stick around. It's Nightlight with Pete Schwabba on the Civic Media Radio Network.
Fill my heart with song and let me sing forevermore. You are all I long for, all I worship and adore. In other words, please be true. In other words,
hey, welcome back to Nightlight with Pete Schwabba. We're in the home stretch. Just finish up these texts here. So Sinatra, I do mostly Sinatra shows, and one song is a medley of two of my favorites. One from my baby, with In the Small Hours of the Morning. That's Jack from Merrimack. By the way, I never thought I'd enjoy a two-hour entertainment show, but since I heard your first one, I listen whenever I can. Thanks, Jack. That's fantastic. And then I got something here. This is from Greg Wansnyder. I had to read that name twice. I thought it might be like some kind of sex thing people were trying to make me read on the air. It says, go Pete, blind man watching you on YouTube right now. Well, that's kind of cool. And a couple more of Sinatra's. Summer Wind, great one. And The Way You Look Tonight, possibly my favorite. Fantastic. Great text, everybody, tonight. I'm talking with the actor Richard Reilly, who is just probably the hardest working man in show business, if not one of them. And he was in the middle of telling me his story about getting the job on Casino. Richard, I'll let you take it from there. So you're learning the lines on the way to the set, and I'll let you take it from there.
Yeah. Okay. So we flew into Las Vegas. They took us right to the set. They put us in a couple of rooms in the honey wagon, and then as soon as they had a break, they took us one at a time over to the trailer that Scorsese was using, and so Clive went in first, and then I went in. And we were sitting around that little banquette in the corner, me and Joe Pesci and Scorsese and the script supervisor, and doing the scene. And we did the scenes. Then they said, okay, go grab something. You know, it's lunch. Go grab something to eat. We'll have a decision, you know, after lunch. So after lunch, there's a knock on the door. They said, will you trim your mustache? I said, sure. And they said, okay, well, say goodbye to Clive. We need to get you into costume. So they took me to the, they said, wait here, a teamster will pick you up and take you to wherever they were buying me a suit. you know, some store in Las Vegas, you know. And there on the corner where I was waiting was Joe, who was smoking a cigar. And I said, and I had just done this movie with him called Public Eye about Ouija, a great, great film. And he was
sweet.
Amazing in it. And so I said, Joe, I know it wasn't me that got this role. I mean, you must have put in a good word for me.
And oh,
he said,
wow.
Yeah, well, just don't mess it up, kid. And so I said, okay. So so the next day we're in the room, the solarium room that looks out over the golf course, and it's 270 degrees of windows, and this has been part of the problem. They keep waiting to get the right light so that they could shoot it, and they've got two tracks. And a camera on each track, and the cameras are moving continually up and down these two curved tracks, and we're crossing them back and forth when we do the scene. But we have to sit and wait until the light's right, and then it's like go. And there was, you know, it was a lot of pressure, but at the same time it was very exciting.
Yeah.
And in between, Scorsese and the DP were discussing all of these movies. Scorsese was putting together this project that he did about saving films, that, you know, the important films. And he was watching, you know, several films each night, you know, that they wanted to add to the list. And so they would talk about them. Do you think this, that, the other thing? And it was like having a film class, you know, while you were waiting.
Yeah.
So we would go and we would do it and blah blah blah. And and the scene started with Sharon Stone coming in, and they had a fight, and then De Niro came and he fixed the drink and lit a cigarette, and he had said a few things. And then Joe, meanwhile, is getting ready to talk to my character, Banker Clark, about, you know, the situation. You say, you have to get, you know, you have to give us the money now because we need the money now.
Yeah.
And then I said, well, you understand? I explained all this to you. This is a CD. If I give you money now, you're going to lose a lot of it because, you know, blah blah blah. And and he says, well, here's the deal. I'm going, you know, if you don't give us the money now, I'm going to beat your head in. And I'll go to jail. And by the time you're coming out of your coma, I'll just be getting out of jail and I'll beat you up again. and then he essentially throws me down the spiral staircase. So part of the deal was that spiral staircase wasn't real. They had taken over this house from this couple that had bought it years later after the whole story had taken place. And they said, look, we're going to have to change it back to look like the 70s, and we may have to do some structural stuff. But just set us up with your interior decorator, and we'll make sure that it's all ready to go for your New Year's Eve party. They had a big New Year's Eve party every year. Well, there was no way it was going to happen, and plus they had cut a hole in the floor and built a spiral staircase that going down, and it was a set piece. So each time Joe would throw me down, it would shake, and you know, I kept going, oh my gosh, is this going to fall apart by the time I get to the bottom? But you know, we finally got that scene, and then we shot, and then they would send me back home and back to L.A. And then they call and they say, okay, can you come up tomorrow? I say, okay. And they say, all right, we're going to do the scene, the bank scene. I said, okay. And then we're going to do this scene. There was a great scene that got cut, unfortunately, because the kid who played Joe's son thought he was done. You know, thought he would have been wrapped, or I guess he'd been told he was wrapped.
Right.
And he'd cut his hair. And so that was they eventually had to. We shot the scene, but eventually couldn't use it. And I said, this is crazy. You know, they're trying to get this all in time to get out and maybe fix the place up so the people can use it. Why is this happening? And finally, one of the, one of the teamsters said, "Oh, you didn't know? The guy that was playing Banker Clark came the first day, and he got so freaked out by all the tension and by all the fast talk going back and forth among everybody, and by all these important people being here, that at the end of the day, when he was wrapped, he went back to the hotel, checked himself out, and nobody could find him, and they had to replace him at the last second."
Oh my gosh. That's and the history is made. Richard, this has been so fun. Thank you for that great story, and thanks for joining me tonight. I got to run. I have 171 questions. I'm not going to get to them, but thank you so much, my friend.
Anytime, Pete.
It's Richard Reilly. This has been Pete Schwabe with Nightlight here on the Civic Media Radio Network. Tomorrow night, I got Steve Burrows. Join me. Thank you. There is nothing for me but to love.